introduced Brigitte Gabriel and created ACT, A-C-T, for America. You tell me what ACT for America is.
ACT for America is the largest national security grassroots movement in the United States.
That's huge.
That is. And the organization was created after September 11th to educate millions of Americans about the threat of radical Islam to national security and world peace, and also to empower and mobilize Americans who feel so frustrated with what's happening around the world and the threat to our country to do something about it. So we have chapters, 910 chapters across the United States.
Citizens. Wait a minute. 910 in America.
In America.
Okay, outside and America.
We have chapters in 11 countries outside of the United States, including Australia, Canada, Israel, France, Spain, even in Nairobi, even in Kenya. I mean, we have like 3 chapters in Nairobi, and I'm thinking, wow. But they're having also problems with the same thing, concerned about the rise of radical Islam and its threat to world peace, and people are getting involved.
Well, you've got a big job, and you've done a good job on the big job, but you've got a lot to do. You know that, and I do too.
We do.
If you were as old as me, you would think, well, I'm getting close to the end of the job, but as young as you are,
you've got
a lot of years to go to solve this problem.
And it's going to be a long and long, hard problem. This is not going to be solved in 5 years or 10 years. This problem has been festering and growing for 40 years at least now globally.
Well, you know what my specialty is oil.
Yes.
And so I focused on that, spent a lifetime working on it, and I've gotten rich doing it. And all, but I try to keep up with other things, but primarily oil. But you know, you know a lot about oil too, because you've helped me on some of the things in the Mideast. But the of course, my solution for America is get off OPEC oil, and some of the money, not all the money, not all the countries. There are 13 OPEC countries, and but some of the money that we buy oil from those countries gets in the hands of, I'm getting a little confused now. There's too many of these, this crowd. I mean, I saw it early on as the Muslim Brotherhood, and then we went on, and now we have ISIS, and now we have the crowd in Nigeria, and then we have the crowd over here. Yemen. I mean, I'm not sure, and also I'm very well aware you have the Sunnis and the Shias, and so it gets a little bit confusing, and I'm leading up to a question for you. It's getting so complicated. I have believed from the outset that country boundaries are not they don't pay much attention to them. These go back to tribes, and they've been around for hundreds of years, and they've been fighting it. And I wonder, how did the United States get mixed up in this, and our being mixed up in it, is it a good idea?
Well, you brought up a good point about tribes in the Middle East and how what we think of countries and how they view countries. In my first book titled Because They Hate, I discuss the Middle East and the countries in the Middle East, and I say, when you're looking at the Middle East, you're looking at tribes with flags. What we classify as countries, they're nothing more than tribes with flags. Their loyalty is to the tribe and not to the country as we think of country and nationalism. And you brought up a good point as well about how this radical ideology and how now they are mushrooming in different parts of the world, different groups. You mentioned the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is the mothership, if you want to say, that launched all these terrorist organizations. They all, we can trace them back to the Muslim Brotherhood. For example, Al-Qaeda was an outburst of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is the oldest Islamic terrorist organization in the world, founded in 1926 and had, and, sorry, 1928, and has 70.
That was my birth year.
Oh,
1928? 1928.
Wow.
So I'm as old as the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, thank God we have someone like you doing so much good in this world. But the Muslim Brotherhood has 70 offshoot Islamic organizations, including Al-Qaeda and ISIS. The leader of ISIS, al-Baghdadi, was in prison in 2011 as a leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, who later on came out and formed ISIS.
But we released him.
Right, exactly. So what's so concerning...
Why did we release him?
Because...
He wanted to go home?
We don't have a leadership that recognizes what we are truly dealing with. We have underestimated the problem. And you, people like you and me who focus about national security, and we know very well how much energy independence and our and oil plays a major part in
you
funding
know, now,
terrorism.
I said that about it gets back to hands of, and guess what they told me at Exxon? None of our money, we've traced it, goes, none of our petrol dollars get in the hands of the enemy. Okay, so maybe none of theirs does. But here you have now ISIS is selling oil
right
into the world market.
Right.
They have oil.
Right.
You got the picture on that when here you had oil in Iraq, and of course Iran, Saudis, all of them have oil. Syria has oil. But nobody ever blows up the oil field. Libya. Nobody blows it up because they're all getting money from those oil fields.
Oil is funding terrorism, all of terrorism. You have two major oil producers, players in the world. You have Saudi Arabia, which controls the Sunni world, and you've got Iran, which controls the Shiite world. And both of these countries are funding terrorist organizations to the tune of millions worldwide. So you take Lashkar-e-Taiba in India, for example, the terrorist group that did the Mumbai attacks a couple years ago, a few years ago. Lashkar-e-Taiba is solely funded by Saudi Arabia to the tune of $5.25 million a year annually. That money coming straight out of oil money from Saudi Arabia. You have, and I just gave you one
$5 million
example.
Dollars isn't a lot of money.
It's not a lot of money. That's like a nickel for the Saudi billionaire. I think Saudi Arabia has seven billionaires that control $49 billion straight from oil. So it's the oil money that is funding terrorism, no matter what part of the world you're looking at. Iran funded Hezbollah and terrorism. Iran committed terror attacks on four continents across the globe, all funded by oil terror. And to give you an example of how they started with that, I come from Lebanon. I was born and raised in Lebanon. When the war started in Lebanon and they started recruiting into this Islamic radicalism, Iran started paying $100 per female to cover her head and wear the hijab. So they would come to a man who's married and has four daughters, and they would say to him, we would pay you $100 per female in your family per month to make them become good Muslims and wear the hijab. And that's how in Lebanon, the radicalism exploded and they started recruiting and organizing for Hezbollah, for example. Not only funding the military movement, but also the impression of how good it is to be a good Muslim, good Shiite Muslims, and revert back to the days of Muhammad, the way Islam was practiced. Saudi Arabia, for example, because of the discovery of oil, which we discovered and we were stupid enough to allow them to nationalize it.
Wait a second.
Okay.
All right. When I got out of school in 51, that over 90% of the oil in the world had been found by American geologists and geophysicists.
That's right.
We're about the same place right now. It was found.
Yeah.
Has there been oil found by other geologists around the world? Yes. But It's work that we did, Americans did. But when you say, did you say we were stupid to allow them to nationalize?
America discovered the oil.
Yes, that's right.
And all the Arabs nationalized it and took it over, and they started using it.
You're saying we should not have allowed them to nationalize it.
No.
We found it. We had contracts with them, and they reneged on those contracts and expropriated.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
But you know who else did that in 1938?
Who?
Mexico.
Except the Mexicans are not killing, are not spreading their radical ideology that's now creating mayhem throughout the world. The Saudis took the profits from the oil money, and from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, by the end of the 90s, Saudi Arabia has spent over $70 billion setting up mosques and Islamic institutions across the world, exporting their radical ideology, fueling hatred within mosques, creating animosity against infidels. So while the intolerance of Saudi Arabia and the way they lived and looked at other people, for example, people like you and me cannot even go into Mecca. We're considered infidels. We can't even step a foot into Mecca because it's the city of Al-Haramain. It's the city of Kaaba.
No, there. I don't want to set foot there.
That's right.
I want to get the hell out of there and come home.
Right, exactly. Oh, my point was,
I do not like to go into somebody else's habitat and engage in war.
No, I agree with you. We're not going to change them. Our interest is to protect ourselves. We're not there to build nations. And what we're doing right now is basically borrowing from China to rebuild Iraq and Afghanistan while our people are starving. The economy is bad. And this is not the way you're going to win hearts and minds. You're not going to change the Middle East. It's a different value system. It's a different mindset. Our idea
but
of it's democracy.
They have practiced what they're practicing for centuries.
Centuries. Centuries. And
why do
change.
We think we're going to change their mind?
We are reflecting our Western values on evil people.
Your nation building.
Yeah, forget nation building. Look at the money we spent on Iraq. Look at the money we spent on Afghanistan.
Look at the
how
people.
Many hearts and minds did we win?
Yes, but how many people we got killed too?
Oh, our people.
7,000.
That's right. That's right. And I don't believe the Middle East is worth a drop of blood of any of our people going over there and dying for people that loathe us, do not respect us, do not like us, do not want to be like us. So why are we sending our sons and daughters over there to die? Well, our job is to kill our enemy, and we can do that by going and bombing the daylight out of them, making sure they understand that if you attack America, you will be destroyed, and we're not going to rebuild you, and get out. And we have plenty of ways to do that. The problem is today we are not doing that. And the problem is today our enemy has become so wealthy. They are using the oil money to fund terrorism. ISIS is the richest terrorist organization in the world today, funding itself strictly on oil. It's unbelievable. They don't even need to raise money the way Al-Qaeda had to raise money or other organizations had to raise money. They are funding themselves.
You say Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda gets money from oil.
Oh, yeah. And the Saudis funded Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden in the beginning, thinking, if we just keep him occupied over there in Afghanistan,
they're also
he'd
paying
leave us
ransom.
Alone.
They're paying ransom.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Al-Qaeda, yeah. Leave them alone if they pay them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so what we're seeing right now is this radical ideology that is spreading in different continents across the world. And it's an ideology. It doesn't matter the name of the terrorist organization, whether it's Al-Shabaab in Somalia or Lashkar-e-Taiba in India or Ansar al-Sharia in Libya or ISIS in Iraq and Sham. They all share the same ideology. And right now, oil money is funding terrorism across the globe. And now they are using that money to build a sophisticated network of television production, internet, social media. They are far more sophisticated than we are. When they are able to hack into the Pentagon, when they are able to hack into our military infrastructure and laugh at us, and we have no way of outsmarting these hackers, the enemy has built such an infrastructure with their money that now we are seeing the effect on a mega scale. And all that costs money. I mean, when you look at ISIS infrastructure, it's like a corporate, it's like a Fortune 500 company, except it operates even better than a Fortune 500 company because it's got the loyalty of the faithful who are...
The loyalty, if they don't have loyalty, they'll kill them.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, if there's any breakdown in loyalty...
That's right.
You can see right quick how that's managed.
That's right. And that's why it's so important for the American public to understand why we need to paralyze OPEC, why we need to become energy independent, why we need to explore different types of energy, drill, baby, drill, any alternative energy, flex fuel, fuel choice, natural gas, because we need
you have legislation working on this subject.
Correct.
Okay, tell us about that.
We at ACT for America started focusing on what type of legislation we can pass to protect the country. Any legislation relating to national security. We have bills about that protects the Constitution from the encroachment of foreign law that's not compatible with the Constitution, especially Islamic law coming from overseas. We have laws for anti-terrorism. ACT for America has passed 17 bills in 19 states in the last 5 years. Right now, our focus, one of our bills, is energy. We need to become energy independent, and we need to empower the energy market in the United States to paralyze OPEC, which dictates the price oil worldwide. And so what we're working right now, there are three different bills in Congress. Two are almost the same in the House and one in the Senate. The Senate bill and the House bill, there is the Dole bill in the House and there's the Ron Paul bill in the Senate. And they both almost are exactly the same with the little minor details, and I'm not going to get into the minutia of the details. But basically both are good bills if they pass, and which will allow for competitive energy in the United States and for new markets to develop. So at least investors will be able to get into and invest in what we call fueling stations across the United States, where when you pull to a gas station, instead of it being only a gas station, you can fill your car with whatever.
You have choices.
You have choices. I mean, we have choices in everything else. You want to buy a box of cereal. You walk down the grocery store and there is 19 different brands of cereal you can pick from.
Do you get that with gluten or without gluten?
Oh, no, I come from the real world. I eat anything. I don't eat gluten-free.
But you have choices.
We have choices.
But there are American choices.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Anything American will work.
Exactly. Exactly. Anything American will create jobs, anything Americans we control to protect ourselves, to make sure we are safe, to make sure at least we are not funding our enemies. And if we can at the same time do that, and at the same time render oil basically not a precious commodity anymore, just like salt. Remember how salt used to be such a precious commodity? People fought wars over salt
because salt was
the precious commodity everybody wanted.
But then salt was used as a preservative.
That's right.
Not just out of the shaker.
That's right. That's how people preserved food. You know, it was survival. Yeah. And right now, oil is very much the same because if you want to get food into the grocery store, you need oil in the trucks, you need oil in the cars, you need oil people driving to work. Oil today is like salt used to be. Actually, the word salary comes from the word salt because this is how they used to pay people. So what we want to do today is not only energy independence by drill, baby, drill, and natural gas and everything that we have. We want to make sure that America, as a leader in the world today, be able not only to get into something that will create tens of thousands of American jobs and put money in American pockets, making us secure, but also paralyze our enemy and render them useless.
Did you see the State Department official on television? And here we are with information. They're killing people in the Mideast. And this person with the State Department said, we need to get jobs for these people. Did you see that?
That's crazy.
It's been two or three months ago. I couldn't believe it, and I saw it several times. Get jobs for them. They have jobs.
They have jobs.
And they have money.
They want their jobs, and they have money. And people look at the surgeon of Al-Qaeda, of ISIS right now, the Russian doctor that left his practice, his clinic, and went to fight with ISIS. Do you think that guy didn't have a job? He was a doctor. He definitely had the Mercedes, the BMW, whatever luxury car he was driving. You know, he lived in a decent house.
Was he in Russia?
Yes.
I don't know. That may be a decent choice to go to ISIS instead of stay in Russia.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Russia fan.
But the point is, when you look at all the people that are leaving their careers and going to ISIS because they believe in the ideology, they believe, I'm going to do this because I'm searching for something more spiritual, and I identify with these people and I want to do something with them.
Well, you damn sure got something that's spiritual. You hook up that crowd.
It's the ideology.
Sure.
That's what we're fighting. And because of political correctness, nobody wants to talk about it. And I believe...
Yeah, talk about political correctness for about 2 or 3 minutes. It's absolutely silly.
Yeah.
Political correctness.
Political correctness is the shackles by which our enemies are leading us to our demise.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. Political correctness is rendering great men in the United States as little boys who are lacking a backbone to stand up and be a voice. Political correctness is making George Washington turn in his grave and our founding fathers to see how the land of the free and home of the brave has become the land of the cowards and the home of the fearful who are afraid to stand up for something.
Now, I'm not going to let you go that far.
Well,
we still have, it's still America.
It's still America. And we still have great people, but the majority right now in our government and who is running our government today, we do not have leadership, the likes of the leadership of George Washington and General Patton, who did not care about our enemies, but did the right thing to protect Americans without any regards as to how the UN feels about
it. Yeah, I'll go along with that, but you have to look, our Congress, the House and the Senate are conservatives.
Yes.
Okay, how do you think that happened?
The American public spoke.
That's right, because they saw the weak leadership in the White House, and the White House is what caused the Republicans to win the House and Senate.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
you've got a presidential race coming up, and you can't. I can ask you about the Democrat side, because they seem to insist on wanting Hillary Clinton to run. But you look at the conservative side, we've got a dozen good candidates.
Yes.
There isn't one there that isn't a good patriotic person. You may not fully agree with some of the things they're for, but they're patriotic.
Oh, absolutely. They are patriotic. They love this country. There is a difference between being patriotic and between having to be politically correct. And I think that's the difference that we need to make very clear. I have no doubt that those who got elected to serve in Congress, whether on the left or right, ran because in their mind, they believe they love this country so much, they have the right vision for the country.
As long as we have that in place,
right,
we can save ourselves.
We can save ourselves. And it's so important, this election coming up, for people to understand what's at stake, why we as Americans need to be proud of who we are, need to be proud of our heritage, need to be proud of who we are as a nation. We shouldn't apologize for anything we have done. America is still a beacon of light to the world. America is still leading and freedom leader in the world. I mean, we have went to war and killed our daughters and sons to liberate four Islamic countries. I mean, to fighting Islamic wars. I mean, yeah, when you look at Iraq, Afghanistan.
Those could have been, they were mistakes made believing we could be successful.
Right.
And but, that didn't happen, and we didn't even come close to making it happen.
Right.
But you look, I find it interesting that candidate Clinton, over the weekend, was making speeches about billionaires, never about millionaires, because she's a millionaire. She hadn't quite gotten to a billion yet.
She's working on it.
She's working on it. She is worth more than money. She and her husband are worth more money than the 12 or 15 Republican candidates are worth, total.
Yeah.
I mean, you add up their net worth, and it will not be what the Clintons' net worth is. And she's talking about, you know, that people make too much money and everything. She's going to have a tough campaign, I can tell you, to explain where all the money came from.
And not only that, but how can she relate to the average American? I mean, when was last time she drove to work? When was last time she worried about putting gas in her car or signing her children or grandchildren up for some activity?
And said when she left the White House, they were broke.
Her definition of broke and the average American definition of broke is completely different.
Exactly.
And what record does she has to show for her success as Secretary of State? The world is
not
the worst place
good,
today.
Not a good record.
Not a good record at all.
Well, you know, you and I agree on almost everything.
And I like that.
Yeah.
I think that is wonderful.
We've had a nice conversation.
Yes, we did.
And I appreciate you joining with me, explaining some things that I didn't fully understand. And let's do it again.
It will be my honor and privilege. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be with you and talk about Act for America and what we do. And I look forward to being with you many, many times.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sure.